This episode may contain strong language, nudity, and dated pop culture references. Parental discretion is advised.
From coast to coast, it's Two Packs with me, Jeffrey Golden. Welcome to Two Packs, a trading card comedy show where we open up packs of weird, retro, behind-the-scenes cards with a funny friend. This week we've got something different planned, as you can no doubt tell from the audio quality. Today I'm joined by the hilarious cartoonist behind the book Masterpiece Comics. His work has appeared in The New Yorker, Nickelodeon Magazine, The Daily Show, and he worked on a number of classic trading cards, including Garbage Pail Kids, which is what we'll be talking about today. So, ladies and gentlemen, Bob Sikoriak. Hello, Bob.
Hi, Jeffrey.
How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing good. We're coast to coast here.
Yes.
Me in LA, you in New York. Our voices are flying over the country right now.
Yes, we're in our own media bubbles.
We should rename the show Bubble to Bubble.
That's good.
I like that. To get started, I want to talk to you about your career in trading cards. You're known for drawing these amazing literary mashup comics. You'll take characters, iconic comic book characters like Batman, the Lulu, the Garfield, and you will mash them up with different things. It's really amazing work.
Thanks.
One of your early gigs was drawing and writing gags for trading cards. Is that correct?
That is correct, yes.
How did you get involved with the Topps Company?
I had the great fortune of working with Art Spiegelman and Francoise Mouly at Raw Magazine, which was their comics anthology that they were doing through the 80s. I got involved with them around 87, 88. One of Art's day jobs was working at the Topps Bubblegum Company. He asked me to come in one day and write some gags. I was working totally freelance. It was just project to project.
At this point, was Garbage Pail Kids a thing? I definitely remember the hype surrounding Garbage Pail Kids when it came out. They were very controversial. Parents wouldn't let kids purchase them at schools. They would confiscate them. Was Garbage Pail Kids already blowing up at Topps at that time, or was this before that media storm?
Oh, by the time I was there, it was already storming. There was no question. I think I worked on series 14, and they put them out super fast, but it had already been a few years since Garbage Pail Kids came out. I'm going through my files now. Yeah, so the project I worked on came out in 1988.
So by 1988, they had already done 13 series of Garbage Pail Kids?
That is correct.
How many cards are in a series or were in a series at that time?
Oh, I should have looked this up for you to be sure, but I believe it was 30 paintings, and then each character had two different names.
Oh my goodness, 30 paintings. Because the art on Garbage Pail Kids, it's not like we open a lot of trading cards on this show. And some of the art, like, it's very clear not a lot of time was spent, especially with cards that were like movie cards. They're just like stills from the movie. They take stills from the movie. They put a border on them. Bing, bang, boom, you're done. Garbage Pail Kids were not like that at all. These are very detailed drawings.
Yes, every drip of snot is lovingly rendered.
So you wrote gags for the backs of Garbage Pail Kids cards.
Yes, that's right. There was a group that would come up with the concepts for the front. And I think sometimes they would do sketches, and then those would be passed on to the people who'd actually do the paintings. I came into this at the 14th series. So they had come up with, my math is going to be a little shaky, but somewhere around 700 different ideas at that point, if I'm doing the math right. So I sensed a certain exhaustion. not in the actual results, but in the brainstorming room.
How many name plus derogatory phrase that is the same letter can you come up with, you know?
Right. And then you have to have two variants of it. So
right.
It was his head exploding. I know he was Adam Bomb. I can't remember what his other name was, but he had another name.
Boom Boom Benny?
Maybe.
I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there. Topps. Sure. Maybe could have been. I could have been a contender. Were you actually coming into their offices, or Did you have like an office?
I sat in the room where there were a group of people working. I didn't have I didn't have my own cubicle and I didn't have my own office. It was really fun and I'm really glad I got to pitch in, but I was one of many, many people who were writing and drawing for them. So
who were some of you mentioned?
It wasn't like I had, they didn't like paint my name on the glass door or anything.
I was imagining like a Mad Men-esque, office where everybody is pitching a Don Draper figure.
Right.
The process was almost like the way they punch up a movie script in Hollywood where you get a bunch of really talented folks together to sort of come up with ideas or like a sitcom writer's room kind of thing.
I think so, yeah. I mean, there weren't that many people there all at once. You know, the people who were doing the paintings, I don't think I'd ever met them. Maybe they came by once or twice. I wasn't there every day. I think I would come in once or twice a week to like deliver my gags and then we'd go through them and they'd tell me which ones were terrible and which ones they'd use. And sometimes those were the same ones, but I would be there once or twice a week. I would do concept drawings for future candy projects that some of them I don't even know if they happened or not.
In the 80s in New York, there is this incredible indie cartoonist scene. And you were mentioning some of the names. Are there names you think if we're fans of cartoonists that we'd recognize that were also working at Tops at the time?
Well, it really depends on project to project. Art Spiegelman and Mark Newgarden were the two folks I was working with the most at Tops. And Mark has done many things. He had a book come out from Fantagraphics a few years ago called We All Die Alone, which is a collection of his gag cartoons, which are really hilarious and much more conceptually and psychologically darker than Tops would necessarily let him do. I mean, he's brilliant. He was one of, actually, Art and Mark, I took classes with both of them, and I learned so much from them in terms of my cartooning approach. Drew Friedman did a lot of work.
That's amazing.
He worked on Toxic High, which was a series that was happening around that time.
Yeah, we opened Toxic High cards recently on the show.
There was a Pee-wee's Playhouse.
We opened those two.
I'm pretty sure that Gary Panter and Ken worked on those. I feel like David Sandlin worked on something, but I'm not sure now. Like, there were a lot of people, and you know, most of the work is uncredited.
Right.
I mean, only now are people writing about it and putting out books where more of the unsung heroes are kind of mentioned. Because Art was involved for so many years, he pulled in a lot of people from the alternative comic scene, and it ended up, there would be a lot of familiar names.
That's so cool. I think it's great that like you guys had a day job that, while not necessarily the artistic pursuit that you would have wanted, like that it was like creative and made a huge impact on people.
Oh, I would say so for sure. And the fact that they're still making them now is also a testament to that. Because I mean, it's generational now. I can't imagine that the only people buying them now are people who were fans in the 80s. So it's like they definitely hit a nerve. I was very happy to work there. I grew up with Wacky Packages and all the other things that sort of evoke that aesthetic, like Mad Magazine and things like that. So I felt very much at home there.
You also got a chance to work a little bit behind the scenes at Bazooka Joe as well.
Yes, I think Bazooka Joe is a great comic form. Yeah, actually, one of the other artists I should have mentioned was Howard Cruz, who drew the reboot of Bazooka Joe in the 80s. And that was around the time that I was working at Tops, and they asked me to write gags, which I thought was very exciting. I love like compression in comics. I love the idea of boiling it down, and those things are about as boiled down as you can get. So what was maybe the most fun about that was that they opened up their files and I got to get copies of all the early Bazooka Joe wrappers. So for those of you who don't know, Bazooka Joe was the wrapper that the gum came in.
Oh my goodness. I would hope that you wouldn't have to explain to this audience
what Bazooka Joe
is. If they don't know, you know what? If they don't know what Bazooka Joe is, they have not been paying attention.
Yeah, what episode is this by now? Like
40 something.
Yeah, it's a little late. Okay. I mean, all of my references are often before my time, so I worry about anyone slightly younger than me not knowing what I'm talking about, but I'm glad to hear it. Anyway, 3 to 4 panel gag comic strips. Every week I would write a few of those. I'd bring them in and they'd buy a few of them and I'd get paid, you know, I don't know, it was like $25-$35 bucks for a gag. It wasn't, I mean, it was great out of school. It was awesome.
Boy, rates for comics have not changed much, unfortunately.
No, I mean,
30 years.
And this is, I mean, these were sketches too. The idea was that Howard would draw them. I must have sold about 20 or 30. Yeah, it was great. I mean, one of the things that got me very excited about working there was I was walking to the subway one day and I saw like a gum wrapper on the ground and I thought that's going to be me. Like I actually, I saw my future and I was very excited to be part of like the cultural detritus, the landscape of cultural detritus. I don't know, something like that. And if you've ever seen one Bazooka Joe gag, then you know how they work. They're very, right. They're very dumb. There's a cast of characters and they have dumb little adventures, but it's like, there's a purity to it.
Like a haiku in comics form.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Because they're so small, you could fit like, I counted them out. I think you could fit like 10, 15 words in a panel. I can't remember what it was, but you know, it's like very spare.
Right.
And it is like haikus in that sense that it literally has to be, you have to kind of count your spaces out.
Was Toxic High produced the same way as a group of people like pitching on ideas in a room, or was there a different process for that?
I felt like that was Mark Newgarden's and Drew Friedman's baby. It all kind of generated from them. I was involved maybe even more peripherally. And that, again, I was writing gags for the backs of the cards. So for Garbage Pail Kids, everyone remembers the fronts, but like the backs of the cards would have like fake diplomas.
I'm going to open this, this right now so we can, I will open, I'm literally opening the pack as we do.
I never get tired of the audio from that.
I know. Isn't that great?
Great.
Oh, wow. A lot of these are pop cultures. I see. They must have, at some point, they must have done 80s spoof stickers because there's one that says this is Marshmallow Manny, who looks like the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. And he's like roasting humans on a burning building. This one's a sticker, so it doesn't really have much on the back. This one, Limber Luigi, looks like Luigi of Super Mario fame, but he's distorting himself as he tries to fit into a pipe. Do any of these have the copy on the bag? So hilariously, none of these have the original copy on the bag, which doesn't help our purposes. Do any of these ring a bell? Jules Drools? It's a young, sort of like Adam Bomb with the explosion on the head, but is also drooling, and it's like water, it's like drool coming out of the head as an explosion, like water coming out of the head. There's Elaine Vane. She's like a weightlifter, but she's lifting weights so hard that you can see veins like all over her body, which is pretty gross.
I have to say, like, the tropes all sound familiar.
Right.
I mean,
Petey Phlegm, ring any bells? He's like an 80s punk kid who like spits snot out of his nose like graffiti and is using it to draw a butt.
The bells are ringing, but I'm not sure where they're coming from.
One more for you here. Lizard Lou looks like, well, this one's, I'm not sure I quite understand this one.
That happens at the end of every series.
Right, yeah, where there's like a couple that like kind of go over everybody's head a little bit. This one, it looks like, oh, maybe it's a lizard shedding its skin. So he's like a boy, like a lizard boy, and he's got like green flaps of skin, but the skin is like coming off. But it looks like there's skeleton underneath, not like another like lizard skin. So I guess it's just, he's just shedding his skin to reveal skeleton.
It sounds like a great visual.
Could you recall any of the ones that you worked on?
Yeah, I have my sketches here. It's funny, I have my sketches and somewhere buried in another box is the actual cards. But I think some of these got through. The series I was doing was a parody of Believe It or Not. I don't remember what funny name we came up with to not be sued by the Believe It or Not people. But it was a similar thing to what you're talking about now. It's flooding back to me because I would go through all of the characters that they'd used in previous cards, and I would try to come up with gags about them. I have a picture of Sandy Claude, a Santa Claus knockoff. He's a kid with stubble wearing a Santa Claus suit.
Cool.
And he has a complete list of the boys and girls who've been good this year. And then it says at the bottom, and for $10, he'll put anybody on the list.
He's open to bribes.
Sure.
He's got to make some money. So, he's got to get his beak wet. His stubbled Santa beak wet.
Yes. No beak, but yes, there is the stubble. buy some razors. And then Audio Augie has 5,357,111 records in his collection. Unfortunately, he's deaf. So
kind of like the Twilight Zone, where he could finally read, and then he destroys his glasses, and he's
just like
functionally
that.
Blind. It's that exactly, but for children. When you reconnect with this stuff, what does it make you feel? How do you feel thinking about it now?
I was really excited to be published. I mean, first of all, that was really exciting to get my work out there, and it certainly. I had affection for these series, you know, in some form or another. Garbage Pail Kids essentially came out of Wacky Packs, as I mentioned before. And I love those. It felt like I was being part of a tradition. And I also, as a freelance artist, I love thinking about people who just do the gigs and then you look back and then you see a body of work. It's fun to think of like Art Spiegelman is going to be known for winning the Pulitzer Prize for his graphic memoir, Mouse, but he also worked at Tops for many years. And it's just the life of a freelance artist is kind of fascinating to me. You know, just the journeyman toiling away and making a body of work, making a living. I love the idea that people who would not know any of my other work that is actually credited to me would go, oh, I remember Garbage Pail Kids very vividly. Like, it's exciting to think of reaching a different audience. And I love doing work for kids. So I love helping that tradition move forward too, I guess.
Speaking of American traditions, protest, there's a vast movement now resisting Trump, and you're involved with a fascinating project. You call it the Unquotable Trump, right?
Yes, yes.
You're using your God-given gift of a parody and protesting Trump by slinging his own quotes back at him, but recontextualizing them as classic comic book covers.
Right, right. That's very good. It's funny that you say that I'm involved in a project because... Nobody asked me to do this. It was something I felt really compelled to do. And it occurred to me right before the election. I was just exhausted about with all of his quotes that just seemed so unpleasant and unkind and uncivil. And even though I work for Topps Bubblegum, I felt like the level of civility had really gone away.
Yeah, isn't that amazing that, like, you know, you as a contributor to Garbage Pail Kids can look at his quotes and be disgusted?
Yeah. I'd done parodies of presidents before. I did some work for The Daily Show when Bush was president. So I'm occasionally political, but I was really just struck by how dismissive he is of his enemies. And I'm talking about Trump now. How dismissive he is of his enemies and just how recklessly he speaks. So
there is sort of a supervillain quality to that.
I thought so. I mean, again, I'm not the first person to think about putting a president or a candidate into parodies of old comic book covers, but I thought using his own words was really important. Like, the whole point of it for me was to not, I mean, obviously, in some level, I'm editorializing because I'm putting him in these contexts, but I'm not changing what he's saying. I think one of the issues that comedians have had with Trump is that it's very hard to parody someone who's already speaking so outlandishly. So for me, it was just really important that I just stick to his script or his not script, shooting off his mouth. So anyway, I had this idea before the election. I was like, I don't want to think about him anymore. And then he won. Yeah. And I was like, I guess I got to do it now.
I guess I got to move forward with this. Your body of work is so cool. The other project that folks really have to track down of yours, besides Masterpiece Comics, which is a masterpiece, I would say, is your iTunes Terms and Conditions book.
I originally published it myself because I didn't know if anyone would want to do that. It is a complete, unabridged adaptation of the complete Terms and Conditions from Apple. And it's 20,000 words, and it's the final book is 100 pages long, and every page is in a different style, and all of the text is verbatim from the Terms and Conditions.
It's a wonderful piece of work. We have the early zine version, but we're desperate to get the new book. Do you know when it comes out, when it hits shelves?
Yes, it'll be out, I believe March 7th is the date, and it's coming out from Drawn and Quarterly, and it's called Terms and Conditions, the Graphic Novel.
Great. You got to get Terms and Conditions. You have to be following the Unquotable Trump. Are you on Twitter?
Yes, I'm on Twitter as R. Sikoriak.
as Arsa Koryak. Bob, thanks so much for sitting down talking with us today on Two Packs. We really appreciate the inside look at some of our favorite cards here today.
You're very welcome. Oh, can I say one more thing?
Oh, please.
It occurred to me when we were talking about Garbage Pail Kids and Bazooka Joe, Abrams Comic Art, the publishing house, has been doing this beautiful series of anthologies of Garbage Pail Kids. They did a Bazooka Joe book that I wrote an essay for. They've done like Star Wars collections where they reprint the cards in their entirety. The books are beautifully designed. They even have like wax paper dust jackets so they feel like the packaging. And they're really
beautiful. That's so cool. Yeah, I need those. I need those desperately. You've got a lot of books to buy, folks. And Bob, thanks so much for stopping by.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you to Meltdown Comics, as always, for hosting the show. And for Mason, who's usually in the booth, but not this time. We recorded this from home. Take care, folks. Bye-bye.
Two Packs was produced and engineered by Mason Booker. Opening theme by Matt Myers. Bright music by Lee Rosevere. Logo by Kenny Kyle. Like the show? Rate and review us on iTunes. It helps us find new listeners as cool as you. Follow us on Twitter at Two Packs Podcast, that's T-W-O, and me at Jeffrey Golden, that's Jeffrey with a G. Special thanks to Meltdown Comics. I left a bunch of these cards at the store for you to take. I'm your host, Jeffrey Golden. Hey, be good to each other.
I don't know if you've opened a pack of 1980s trading cards recently, but the gum doesn't hold up very well, as we've discovered on this show.
I don't remember it being holding up in the 80s. I don't know. I mean, is it still pink?
Sometimes it has like these brown liver spots that are pretty gross.
I didn't feel very compelled to eat it at the time, so I can't.